Srimad Bhagavatam, 9th Canto, Chapter 2, The Dynasties of the Sons of Manu, Text 29 through 36, and then Chapter 3, Text 1 through 9. And then we chant 10. Is that right? 9. We chant 9. Okay. Maruta's son was Dhamma. Dhamma's son was Rajavardhana. Rajavardhana's son was Suhriti. And his son was Nara. I'll just make a comment about King Maruta, because it was just a few days ago. There's a big section in Sri Garga Samhita about King Maruta. And so we were absorbed in that topic. It's described that, well, it's already mentioned in the past few verses that he held a sacrifice that was so great, there's never been a sacrifice of that magnitude before. And it was King Maruta's sacrifice that had the leftover utensils of gold that, does it say that in there? Maybe not. But the leftover utensils of gold that were used by Maharaj Yudhisthira for his Rajasuya sacrifice. That was left over. And so Arjuna was advised to go there and get those golden utensils. And another interesting thing is that King Maruta became, that was the previous life of King Ugrasena. King Ugrasena was in his previous life Maruta, King Maruta. And after Maruta's time, after his life ended, he was sent to the heavenly planets to wait in comfort until it was time for appearing as King Ugrasena to continue his service to Lord Krishna. King Ugrasena is the grandfather of Lord Krishna. So, we'll continue with the next verse. The son of Nara was Kevala, and his son was Dunduman, whose son was Vegavan. Vegavan's son was Buddha, and Buddha's son was Trinabindu, who became the king of this earth. Text. By the way, just hearing the names of these great kings is very auspicious. Just because these are such great personalities, their names, just hearing the vibration of their names purifies one. So we're becoming purified just by hearing their names. The best of the apsaras, the highly qualified girl named Alambusha, except at the similarly qualified Trinabindu as her husband. She gave birth to a few sons and a daughter known as Ilavila. Text 32. Translation. After the great saint Vishrava, the master of mystic yoga, received absolute knowledge from his father, he begot in the womb of Ilavila the greatly celebrated son known as Kuvera, the giver of money. This is also the same father, if I'm not mistaken, of another famous personality. Yes. You can say his name louder? Yes. Ravana. Ravana and Kuvera were brothers. Continuing, next text, translation. Trinabindu had three sons named Vishala, Shunyabandhu, and Dumraketu. Among these three, Vishala created a dynasty and constructed a palace called Vaishali. Text 34. Translation, the son of Vishala was known as Hemachandra, his son was Dumraksha, and his son was Samyama, whose sons were Devaja and Krishashva. Srimad Bhagavatam is considered the ripened fruit of all Vedic knowledge and the topmost authority amongst all Vedic literatures. So everything that's here that we read is fully authoritative. Text 35 and 36. Translation. The son of Krishashva was Somadatta, who performed Ashvamedha sacrifices and thus satisfied the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu. By worshipping the Supreme Lord, he achieved the most exalted post, a residence on the planet to which great mystic yogis are elevated. The son of Somadatta was Sumati, whose son was Janamejaya. All these kings appearing in the dynasty of Vishala properly maintained the celebrated position of King Trinabindu. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the ninth canto, second chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam entitled The Dynasties of the Sons of Manu. In previous ages, sacrifices were the men, the means. Tretayam Yajaya Makai. The sacrifices was the means in the Treta Yuga too. Please the Lord. And the kings were qualified to perform and give away such charity, and it's stated that about King Maruta that sacrifice, no one will ever be able to perform such a sacrifice again. In other words, not only was it the greatest that's ever been, but no one will ever in the future be able to compare to it. He was so charitably disposed. I think the Bhaktivedanta Manor is interested in following in the footsteps of taking care of guests and Brahmins and worshiping the Lord as opulently as possible, so we can try to get the blessings of King Maruta, so we can do that. Now chapter 3, the marriage of Sukanya and Chayavana Muni. Text 1. Sri Shukadeva Goswami continued, O King Shariati, another son of Manu, was a ruler completely aware of Vedic knowledge. He gave instructions about the functions for the second day of the yajna to be performed by the descendants of Angira. Text 2. Translation. Shariati had a beautiful lotus-eyed daughter named Sukanya, with whom he went to the forest to see the ashram of Chayavana Muni. Text 3. Translation. While that Sukanya, surrounded by her friends, was collecting various types of fruits from the trees in the forest, she saw within the hole of an earthworm two things glowing like luminaries. Next text. Translation. As if induced by providence, the girl ignorantly pierced those two glowworms with a thorn, and when they were pierced, blood began to ooze out of them. Text 5. Translation. Thereupon, all the soldiers of Shariati were immediately obstructed from passing urine and stool. Upon perceiving this, Shariati spoke to his associates in surprise. Text 6. Translation. How strange it is that one of us has attempted to do something wrong to Chayavana Muni, the son of Bhrigu. It certainly appears that someone among us has polluted this ashram. There's many sciences that give information about things that are not known outside of the Vedic culture, at least not to the same extent. One of them is the science of astrology, the other is the science of omens. An astrologer, the king always kept expert astrologers with him at all times, because he had to determine everything according to the Jyotisha. For example, if he were to march out, if he were going out on a tour, he would have the astrologer or the priest calculate what would be the most auspicious time for going out. If he were to leave on an inauspicious day, and he would meet with catastrophe or an inauspicious time, or if he were to go in a direction at an inauspicious time, he had to go at the right direction at the right time on the right day, and he had to perform all kinds of worship before going out, worship of the different demigods in charge of the directions, in charge of everything. And the priests, they also knew the science of omens, so they could tell. And the king, we know Yudhisthira Maharaj was very expert in omens. He knew all the omens. If one goes out and he sees a milk pail that's empty, that's inauspicious. Something inauspicious is going to happen. If he sees a pail of milk that's full, that's auspicious, he can expect something auspicious. So this King Shariati, he knew all the omens. That's how he was able to know that someone has made an offense. We're now in the vicinity of the ashram of Chayavana Muni, and something inauspicious, so unusual, everyone becoming constipated. Who ever heard of such a thing happening? So he understood that somebody has made an offense. And they had to do something quick. So, because it was becoming dangerous. Next text. Translation. Being very much afraid, the girl Sukanya said to her father, "I have done something wrong, for I have ignorantly pierced these two luminous substances with a thorn." Text 8. Valmiki means earthworm. Valmika. Translation. After hearing this statement by his daughter, King Shariati was very much afraid. In various ways he tried to appease Chayavana Muni, for it was he who sat within the hole of the earthworm. Text 9. Translation. King Shariati, being very contemplative and thus understanding Chayavana Muni's purpose, gave his daughter in charity to the sage, thus released from danger with great difficulty. He took permission from Chayavana Muni and returned home. Purport. By His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The king, after hearing the statement of his daughter, certainly told the great sage Chayavana Muni everything about how his daughter had ignorantly committed such an offense. The Muni, however, inquired from the king whether the daughter was married. In this way, the king, understanding the purpose of the great sage Chayavana Muni, tad abhiprayam agyaya, immediately gave the Muni his daughter in charity and escaped the danger of being cursed. Thus, with the permission of the great sage, the king returned home. So it appears that Chayavana Muni had some idea in mind to somehow or other captivate or engage the daughter of Sukanya in making some offense on the pretense so that he could get her as his wife. And King Shariati knew that if he didn't agree to offer his daughter in marriage to the sage, then there was a very good chance of being cursed. And no king wants to be cursed by a powerful sage like Chayavana Muni, who was also known for being irritable. So, a similar situation was Durvasa Muni is also a very famous yogi who can give tremendous benedictions if he's pleased with someone. But if he's displeased with someone, he can really cause them a lot of difficulty. So, Duryodhana, being the type of diplomatic politician that he was, he pleased he had pleased Durvasa Muni once in the past by giving him a very nice reception and a nice meal. So Durvasa Muni said, ask a benediction for me. And Duryodhana said, I don't need anything right now, but later on, if I need something, I'll ask. And they said, okay. So later on, when the Pandavas were during their exile, and Duryodhana wanted to, he always wanted to cause them trouble, kill them if possible, if not kill them, at least cause them as much distress and disturbance as possible. So he asked Durvasa to go, as part of his benediction, to go and visit them when they were in the forest at a certain time that he knew would be after Draupadi had taken her meal. Draupadi had a special dish or pot given by the sun god, if I'm not mistaken, or some very powerful personality that allowed her to prepare unlimited amounts, produce unlimited amounts of foodstuffs from that pot, as long as she had not taken her meal. But if she had taken her meal, then it wouldn't work for that day. So she had already taken her meal. Durvasa Muni came with his 60,000 disciples. And Yudhisthira Maharaj received them very nicely and said, my dear master, please go and take your bath, and then we'll have come back and take meal. So while they were bathing, the discussion came, well, how we're going to feed them, because Draupadi admitted that she had already taken her meal, so there was, her patra was no longer able to produce unlimited amounts. Then Krishna came, and they told him the problem, and he said, so bring me the dish or the pot and give me whatever is left in there. She said, there's nothing in there. It's all clean. He said, no, check again. So they checked, and there was a little bit of dal and sabji, a little bit left. He said, give me that. So he immediately ate that. And upon his eating that, all Durvasa and his 60,000 disciples all became full, so full that they couldn't eat anything. And they decided not to go back to Yudhisthira Maharaj because it would be a great offense. He had cooked for 60,000 people, and now they weren't going to take anything. So they left. And in this way, Krishna saved them from the wrath of Durvasa. So it was well known by kings that under all circumstances, one should never displease a great yogi. So therefore, even though he gave his daughter, she was a young princess, young beautiful princess, Chaivana Muni, as will be described, is very old. He's old, extremely old, and his skin was very loose, wrinkles, very known as being very irritable, and so generally a princess would be given to a very handsome, chivalrous, young Kshatriya. not like this. But there was no question of asking the daughter, because it was too serious. If they became cursed, the whole kingdom could be wiped out. So he just gave in charity his daughter. So what do we learn from this? Well, we learn that the brahmanas or the yogis have great mystic powers. How do they get such mystic powers? There's a system. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has established a system whereby one who wants to get mystic powers can practice yoga. And by practicing yoga, he can get these mystic powers. Of course, one can get something more than mystic powers also by practicing yoga, especially Ashtanga yoga. One can get to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One can meditate on the form and can be elevated to Vaikuntha. But there's also these mystic powers that one can get. And one who wants them. Even today, although generally no one is qualified to perform such mystic yoga, but still there are some people attracted by the idea of getting mystic powers. There are many mystic powers described in the Bhagavatam, 11th canto or 12th canto. And 8 of them are primary. Anima, Lagima, Prapti. Becoming smaller than the smallest. Becoming Mahima, greater than the greatest. Like Putana, Agha. They had these mystic powers. And they were demons. So it's not that everyone who practices yoga is a devotee. There may be demons, and they want to get mystic powers to fulfill their desires. Even Hiranyakashipu practiced such austerities. But they get these powers, and with these powers, they can enjoy their senses. It's like everything can be used in the proper way or spiritual way, or things can be used in a materialistic way. Just like money or wealth. If money is an opulence, it's a benediction if one gets money. But when a materialistic person gets money, he immediately engages it in sinful activities. And in this way, he ruins himself. He ruins the whole himself, his family, or a society. If the leaders misuse wealth, the whole society is ruined. Whereas, if wealth is used for pleasing Krishna, then everyone becomes benefited, such as Narad Muni, how he uses his mystic power. He's also a mystic yogi. But he never uses his wealth for sense gratification. Rather, for serving Krishna. So that's one thing we learn from this. If we read the next text, then we'll get more information here. So I think if that's okay. The story unfolds. Sukanya Chayavanam Prapya Patim Paramakopanam Prinayam Asa Chittagya Apramata Nuvrittibihi. Chayavana Muni was very irritable, but since Sukanya had gotten him as her husband, she dealt with him very carefully, according to his mood. Knowing his mind, she performed service to him without being bewildered. Purport. This is an indication of the relationship between husband and wife. A great personality like Chayavana Muni has the temperament of always wanting to be in a superior position. Such a person cannot submit to anyone. Therefore, Chayavana Muni had an irritable temperament. His wife, Sukanya, could understand his attitude, and under the circumstances, she treated him accordingly. If any wife wants to be happy with her husband, she must try to understand her husband's temperament and please him. This is victory for a woman. Even in the dealings of Lord Krishna with his different queens, it has been seen that although the queens were the daughters of great kings, they placed themselves before Lord Krishna as his maidservants. However a great woman may be, she must place herself before her husband in this way. That is to say, she must be ready to carry out her husband's orders and please him in all circumstances. Then her life will be successful. When the wife becomes as irritable as the husband, their life at home is sure to be disturbed or ultimately completely broken. In the modern day, the wife is never submissive, and therefore home life is broken even by slight incidents. Either the wife or the husband may take advantage of the divorce laws. According to the Vedic law, however, there is no such thing as divorce laws, and a woman must be trained to be submissive to the will of her husband. Westerners contend that this is a slave mentality for the wife, but factually it is not. It is the tactic by which a woman can conquer the heart of her husband, however irritable or cruel he may be. In this case, we clearly see that although Chayavana Muni was not young, but indeed old enough to be Sukanya's grandfather, and was also very irritable, Sukanya, the beautiful young daughter of a king, submitted herself to her old husband and tried to please him in all respects. Thus, she was a faithful and chaste wife. That's the end of the purport. Are there any questions?